Chapter 4. Frank thought he heard bells, faint, distant bells, tinkling at him through a murky fog. He wanted to follow them, but they kept drifting farther and farther away. Some part of Frank screamed for him to move, to get up and run, but all he could do was drift into sleep and wonder why the thought of doing that terrified him. Suddenly Frank was cold. The blackness around him seemed to sting like a thousand needles, as if he'd been dumped into a lake of ice. But the cold also cleared his head and jarred him back to consciousness, up from the thick darkness that threatened to smother him. Frank opened his eyes to find himself lying in his backyard. He coughed and gagged. Just the effort of rolling onto his elbow sent a wave of nausea washing over him. "How did I get here?" Frank wondered. The last thing he remembered was seeing the kitchen stretch and twist like a nightmare. He and Joe had fallen to the floor. Now he was outside and alone. Frank blinked blurry eyes at the house looming in front of him. His vision cleared, and he could make out the two figures stumbling from the back door. He immediately recognized Callie Shaw's black jeans and leather jacket. She wore a red and gold scarf across her face like a Western bandit, and she was pulling Joe along.
"Joe!"
Frank cried, his voice raspy. Joe groaned in response, but couldn't seem to focus on where Frank was. His body seemed so clumsy, as if all it wanted to do was fall. "Got to get up and help," Frank thought. But his knees instantly folded beneath him, and he slammed into the cold, hard surface. He lifted his head in time to see Callie and Joe drop down beside him. Callie yanked the scarf from her face and gasped for air.
"You all right?"
Frank asked as he was hit by another wave of dizziness.
"Sure."
Callie coughed a bit, then gave him a half-smile.
"Only next time you two have problems sleeping, try a glass of warm milk."
Joe tried to get up, but quickly discovered moving was not a good idea.
"Lie still for a minute,"
Frank told him.
"The dizziness will pass."
Already he felt his own balance returning. He sat up and stared into the kitchen, through the open back door. The jack-o'-lantern sat on the countertop, leering back at him with a shimmering eeriness.
"What hit us?"
Joe asked.
"I feel like I've been swallowing cotton balls."
"Don't know,"
Frank said. He turned to Callie.
"What brings you here? Not that I mind."
"After what happened on the docks, I thought you guys shouldn't be alone tonight,"
Callie told him.
"I figured I'd drop by to see if I could be of any help. You didn't answer the bell, but the front door was unlocked, so I came in."
"And found us sprawled out on the kitchen floor,"
Frank said. Callie nodded.
"Suddenly I started choking. I thought there was a gas leak. I slid my scarf over my face, and, well, the rest you know."
"You saved our lives,"
Joe said as he sat up slowly.
"No kidding,"
Callie said. Frank rose, reaching for Callie's bright red and gold scarf.
"May I borrow this?"
he asked.
"I've got a feeling it wasn't a gas leak that knocked us out. At least, not natural gas."
Joe tried to follow his brother, but he was still unsteady. He watched as Frank moved toward the house.
"You've got a hunch?"
"I do,"
Frank replied from the porch. His gaze fell on the jack-o'-lanterns.
"I sure do."
Once inside, Frank extinguished the candles. He quickly opened all the windows and doors, then went back out on the porch. A few minutes later, the Hardys and Callie stood in the center of the kitchen.
"That was no gas leak,"
Frank said, pointing to the jack-o'-lanterns.
"With the lit candles, we'd have had a gas explosion."
He picked up one of the pottery figures and looked at the candle inside.
"Which means someone may have used these candles to try to kill us."
"I thought poisoned candles went out with old detective stories,"
Joe explained.
"Maybe we should get these over to the police lab and let them run a few tests. There could be side effects."
"What do you mean?"
Callie asked.
"We've dealt with enough deadly gases to know that few things wash clean from your system,"
Joe explained.
"There's always the chance some kind of lingering effects. Sickness? Hallucinations? Stuff like that?"
"Joe's right,"
said Frank.
"But before we go, let's check out the house thoroughly. If there are any more traps, I want to find them instead of Mom finding them."
Joe's eyes widened.
"That's right,"
he replied.
"She was home before us, alone."
He looked sick.
"If she had lit those candles..."
He bit the words off.
"What are we waiting for?"
he demanded, hurrying to search the living room. Callie looked worried.
"Do you think he's going to be all right?"
"Joe can take care of himself,"
Frank told her, but he wasn't as sure as his words implied.
"Maybe you'd better wait outside while we search."
Callie shot Frank a get real look. Frank smiled.
"It was just a thought."
Frank and Callie went to search the den. Carefully, they checked the light switches for possible booby traps. Frank was examining the heating vents when the phone rang. He picked up the receiver on the second ring, but Joe was already on the living room extension. Frank heard his brother's greeting. Then he heard the other voice.
"It hurt, Joe,"
the voice was saying.
"Do you know it hurts when you burn to death? When your flesh cooks?"
"Who is this?"
Joe shouted into the phone.
Tell me who you really are so I can come over and show you how funny I think this is!
You know who I am, Joe. I loved you, and you let me die. Just like Vanessa.
In the living room, Joe's anger mounted.
You're not Iola! You're just some loony into sick jokes!
It's our night. The night of the spirits.
The voice on the phone whispered.
There are so many of us here because of you, Joe. How many times have you cheated death? How many others have to die for you, Joe? Join us now, before we take another innocent.
Like Vanessa?
Joe raged.
Like you took Vanessa this afternoon?
The only answer Joe received was a soft click. Then the steady drone of the dial tone. In the den, Frank stared at the phone for a moment, then put down the receiver.
What's wrong?
Callie asked, seeing the distressed look on Frank's face.
Joe just got a crank call,
Frank told her.
Go in there and calm him down. I'll be along in a minute.
As Callie hurried from the room, Frank's mind was racing. Had he really heard the voice of Iola Morton? Or was it just an excellent imitation? Frank didn't believe in ghosts, but he did believe in evil doubles. He and Joe had encountered clones of themselves, imposters created by a perverted fusion of surgery and implanted computer memory. Scientists at a place called the Lazarus Clinic had perfected the technique of turning anyone, including foreign agents, into a nearly foolproof twin with the looks, voice, and even the memory of the original. To finance their own twisted agenda, they had hired out their services to the assassins, fabricating a double of Iola. That clone had nearly lured the Hardys into their deaths, but in the end, Frank and Joe helped the government smash the clone ring. Or had they? Could the person tormenting Joe over the phone be someone repackaged as Iola Morton? Frank picked up the phone and dialed the secret contact number for the network. After giving the proper coded greeting, Frank was put through to the gray man.
I thought you two had plans for the evening,
came the voice of their network contact.
We did,
Frank answered.
But someone has bigger ones.
Frank quickly brought the gray man up to date. The government agent said little, but Frank could tell he was very interested, especially when Frank mentioned the Lazarus case.
Their clinic in Maine has been shut down for some time now,
the gray man told Frank.
It's dead up there.
Then the dead must be walking,
Frank replied grimly.
And it sounds like they're coming to Bayport. Can you guys check it out?
I can have people up there tomorrow,
came the reply.
I'll even go up myself.
Why not tonight? Joe and I could meet you in Maine.
Tomorrow.
It was an order, not a suggestion.
Okay then,
Frank said evenly.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Secure yourselves and stay put until then,
said the gray man. Then he hung up. Frank had no intention of waiting for the next day. Whatever was going on, Joe was the target, and there was no time to waste. Joe was sitting on the couch with Callie as Frank entered the living room.
Callie told me you heard the phone conversation,
Joe said.
Now do you believe me?
I believe that call might tie into a case we had once in Maine.
Frank glanced at Callie. Even though he trusted her completely, he couldn't reveal their connection to the network. Joe caught on immediately.
You really think so? I thought the place was pretty much destroyed.
Maybe not as much as we thought,
Frank replied.
It's worth looking into.
Are we gonna get any help?
Joe asked.
Not till tomorrow.
Callie raised an eyebrow.
All right, you two. Quit beating around the bush. What's this all about?
There's this gang we smashed a while back.
Frank quickly told Callie a bit about the case. He left out the Iola network and assassin connections.
And you think they called you from Maine?
She asked.
I think Joe and I should check out their old hideout. It'll be easier to catch them there than to wait for them to slip up here.
I agree,
Joe said.
But what if you're wrong? What if this has nothing to do with them?
At least it gets you away from whoever is after you.
And it leaves Mom and anybody else here at their mercy. I couldn't handle another.
Joe didn't finish the thought.
No, you go check it out. I'll stay here. That way I can have Con Riley test the candles and I can keep an eye on Mom.
Frank didn't want us to leave his brother alone, but he had to agree that someone should watch over their mother.
Okay,
he said, grabbing the phone.
I'll charter a plane and see if I can get a car up in Maine. With luck, I can be up there and back by midnight. My old flight instructor, Rick Meyerhold, will rent me a plane.
A minute later, he was speaking into the phone.
Rick, it's Frank Hardy. I'm on a case, and I have to get somewhere fast. Can I charter your twin Cessna? Great! It's all gassed up? I'll see you in about half an hour.
It took a couple of calls to arrange a rental car up in Maine, but Frank managed it.
They'll have it waiting at the airport,
he told Callie.
Impressive,
she said.
I only have one change for your plans.
Frank's brow creased.
What's that?
You said you were going alone, but you'll have company. Me!
Frank argued, but Callie would not give in. Finally, she said,
"Look, we're wasting time with all this arguing. I'm going. That's it. End of discussion."
Frank surrendered, and soon he and Callie were in her car, heading for the Bayport airfield.
"I hope Joe will be all right,"
he fretted as they pulled up in front of the airport terminal. Callie turned to Frank.
"Funny,"
she said, and gently touched his cheek.
"I was thinking the same thing about you."
He gave her a quick kiss, then said,
"Rick's operation is in Hangar 5.
Frank pointed to a low one-story structure at the far end of the field. Callie pulled up to the large hangar doorways and cut the engine. They both got out of the car. As they were about to enter the hangar, Frank caught her arm.
"Callie, I don't want you to go. I hate relying on instincts, but this whole thing feels dangerous, as if death will be all around us."
"And I'll be safer here in Bayport."
Callie sighed.
"I doubt it, but I give up."
Impulsively, she removed her scarf and offered it to Frank.
"Okay, Red Baron, at least take this with you."
"Like the knights of old."
Frank tucked the scarf into his jacket pocket, kissed her, then smiled.
"I'll give you a call when I get back tonight."
He turned and walked into the hangar. She stood, watching him walk away. The hangar was well lit by overhead lights, and Frank noticed that crates and boxes were stacked around the room. A twin-engine Cessna was sitting in the center of the room. Its sleek, two-tone body was an impressive sight, and Frank couldn't wait to get behind the controls. But as he neared the plane, he suddenly felt uneasy.
"Hey! Rick!"
he called. He glanced back toward Callie. She raised her hand to wave at him, then suddenly shouted,
"Look out!"
Frank whirled around in time to see a large fist coming straight for his head. He tried to twist out of the way, but he caught the blow on his shoulder. The impact was painful, and it sent Frank smashing up against the plane. Then he sprawled to the floor. Frank looked up. Towering over him was a huge man with deep-set eyes, very pale skin, and sharp, gaunt features. He was dressed entirely in black. The man's powerful hands closed around Frank's throat in a vice-like grip, as cold as ice, as cold as death itself. End of chapter.